Good evening and welcome to the special meeting of the Community Services District Board. I will dispense with public comment because there is no public here. And at this time, we'll go to item C, which is from open.
Do you want to do roll call for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. We will take roll call. I'm just going to do it the regular meeting.
President Simon?
Go ahead.
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Steele?
Here.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you. Now, we'll go from open session to closed session.
There you go.
Where you lock up, turn off the.
Are you going to say?
We're all good.
Letter back?
I need a letter back.
You have a kid?
I've got four. I need one more. Excellent.
Okay, can you take us back into your legal report for open session?
Yes, coming out of closed session, no reportable action.
Thank you. At this time, we'll adjourn until the regular meeting at 7 o'clock. I'd like to call the meeting of the Community Service District Board together to order. We'll start with roll call, please.
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Steele?
Here.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you. And if you'll join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, public comments. And as much as we have no members of the public here, I'm going to dispense with public comments tonight.
Well, at least ask the question.
What?
You're the president.
Which question?
I didn't know if she is a member of the public.
She's with Furman.
She's with Furman. Okay, I didn't know.
I did.
20-some years.
You knew more than I did.
20-some years.
Nope.
I did.
No public comments.
Okay, then. Presentations. Ludorf Scalmanini, presentation, groundwater basin.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. As I mentioned at our workshop back on the first of this month, that Ludorf and Scalmanini and John Fawcett and Tom Tom Elson are here to provide an update on our groundwater basin, and they just recently completed our basin assessment. So I think Tom is going to go ahead and give that report.
Let's see if I can read it.
Oh my goodness. I took my glasses off to read it.
Four pairs of glasses.
So I'm going to cover a number of subjects, but I think I can summarize it all by saying that Rick asked us to come here and basically discuss how your groundwater source supply measures up during the current drought. And so that's going to be what I'm going to be focusing on, and it'll be embodied in these various topics. So first of all, just to give you a perspective of setting, this blue area is the San Joaquin groundwater basin, and I put an arrow as a sub-part of that called the Tracy Subbasin, and that little tip is where we're located. And the San Joaquin's groundwater basin, particularly the south, is an area of lots of subsidence, lots of overdraft. And so one of the questions that we ask ourselves as we look at groundwater conditions here in Discovery Bay is, do the kind of problems that exist elsewhere in the San Joaquin Basin, the greater San Joaquin Basin, can those propagate or those exist up where we are up in that corner? So the boundary at the north there is the San Joaquin River right where the arrow is, but also all the way across to the Sierras is the McCollum River. Sorry, I'll get this right. So now this is a blow up of that area. Discovery Bay is right to the left of that annotation that says fluvial. And alluvial is overlying the Brentwood area. Delta Dunes up there is where Oakley and Diablo Water District is, and Delta Islands is up where Bethel Island, just as a perspective. And then to the left of the red dashed line are the is the Coast Range. And so this area, this is a map from a report we did in 1999 for Discovery Bay, Brentwood, ECCID, and Diablo Water District. And these terms that are used there describe, when we looked at all the well logs and all the information we had on geology, describe what turned out to be some real distinct different settings. Discovery Bay is, by the term fluvial, means that the deposit or the aquifer system was a river system. The alluvial plain over Brentwood is basically streams that are coming off the Coast Range from that direction, from the west, and moving through, say, Marsh Creek and depositing, and that's the source of their water. The Delta Dunes, there's a lot of, you know, we drove past a lot of the vineyards and the real sandy soil. A lot of that is wind-blown, but related to dunes around the Delta system. And then the Delta Islands, of course, this braided system of rivers and streams that around those islands, so another different type of setting. And so this is important in distinguishing your water situation compared to others, and particularly elsewhere in the San Joaquin, that greater San Joaquin Basin.
Is it, are these terms, those four terms, your companies apply to these areas, or is
yeah,
that we've Department of Water
that,
Resources?
Yeah, we've used that for this area. So when you look at the Department of Water Resources, there's really hardly any information about this area. When we first looked at this in 1999, there was no literature sources that said, here's the groundwater conditions in Discovery Bay or Brentwood. It just doesn't exist.
They just generic.
They did the big system.
Picture.
I mean, what they're in, you know, at that time, back in the 90s, this is small, much smaller than it is even now. And then, of course, we had a lot of growth in the late 90s, 2000s. And so it's much more important because of the population. But even compared to the rest of the basin, we're still talking about small amounts. So now coming to, this is out of the master plan that John and Justin from our office worked on, and this is an exhibit to describe the occurrence of groundwater, and specifically the aquifer that we're targeting in our production well. So each of those vertical lines is a lithologic column describing what we encountered in the borehole. The bottom yellow layer is the aquifer that we complete and we pump water from. The upper yellow layer is notable because it's brackish in this area. So it's real salty. Some of the first wells that went in the early 80s actually failed within a couple years because that salt water ate through the casings, and subsequent to those failures, the designs are much different today. And this is just an example. This is well 6, the design of that. So this is just a engineering drawing showing on the left some of the information that we get out of the borehole, but that yellow horizon is the zone that we have the screen intake in the well. And then the red zone is the brackish zone, and you can see that we have a second casing that's cemented in place that protects the well structure from that salt water.
I just add that well to one right outside the door here, so that's number
right.
6.
So what are, how do we describe groundwater conditions? I'm going to do it primarily in two ways, but I'm going to add a third one at towards the end. So we usually, to answer the question of what is the state of groundwater, we do that through discussing water levels. And water levels are can be affected or fluctuate by season, by the type of water year. So now we've had a couple dry years, and so we'll talk about that. Mutual interference is pumping. So your wells induce drawdown in each other, but then you also have some neighbors. Probably the most important one is ECCID has some wells along their main canal just outside of town to the west. And so when they turn on their wells, you could have some drawdown in yours. And so that could cause water levels to fluctuate. And then, of course, how much you pump, the production rate, affects the water levels. And so water levels, like in a surface storage reservoir, or a lake, as it gets depleted, indicates the state of storage in the aquifer system. And then water quality can also be affected by all those things that I mentioned with respect to water levels, and that it could be ultimately be a limiting factor in how much you can pump. So for example, where you're located in the Delta, but probably more critically, there's systems or cities that pump next to the ocean, and so if you pump too much, you could bring seawater in, and that could be a limiting factor in how much you can pump. And so that's how water quality can sometimes constrain pumping. And in that preceding couple slides, you know, we do have salt water here. It's shallower, but we eliminate it with seals. So let's talk about water levels and where we are today. So this is a graph of all the water levels of your wells dating back to the 1980s and all the way to present as of a couple weeks ago. So on the right-hand side, the last readings, those dots are February 2014, and then I think the earliest one is like 1988 for well 4. And so early on, we had a lot of data, and you can sort of see an up and down trend to it, and so that's the seasonal fluctuations that we see. So from, if I expanded the scale, you'd see that in the spring we'd have a high level, and in the fall we'd have the low level. And so that happens because in the spring we're not, by the time you come to springtime, you're not pumping as much, and you've had a wet period, and so you've got recharge that's occurred. And then in the summer, less recharge, there's more pumping, and so they tend to, water levels tend to drop. So you have that fluctuation. So now something, as we look forward, you see the water levels at present, they're at a lower level. There's a little bit of a sense of an up and down, and that's the same kind of seasonal fluctuation we see. But there's definitely a step down, so you've asked yourself, is that a trend that exists in the data? And I'll put a question mark there because I'll try to explain what my interpretation of that is. And what one of the things that we I've superimposed on here is the production. And so going back, if in the absence of production, we might say that water levels are going down, and I might anticipate that to be a continuing trend. But when I look at what's happened with production, we basically have doubled production from the late 80s into the 90s and then to present. And I'm going to clean this up a little bit, and let's just look at one well. So this is well 4 data. And in those early years, we were averaging about 600 million gallons per year of production. And the water levels looked stable and fluctuated within that seasonal range that I explained a second ago. And then today, we're at about 1,300 million gallons, over double. And now the water levels, there's some seasonal fluctuation. I don't have as much data to work with, but I will say that the last reading in February of 2014 is as high as it was in about 2009. And so it tells me that despite the dry conditions that we've had, the water level in that well is the same as it's always been. And that's an important point, and I'll discuss that a little bit more in a moment. Well,
how do you get a reading?
So these are all manual readings. So we have a sounder, which is a cable on a reel, and it has a sensor, and when it gets into the water, it completes a loop and gives you a beep.
And it's
graduated, you read it, and get a direct reading that way. So depth of water, and we can convert that to elevation or any datum that we want.
You have transducers.
And we have transducers, and I'll mention those in a moment.
All right.
Okay, so same data, and now let's discuss what's happened with climate. So in that same time period that I've been showing you, all these gray areas are droughts, are multi-year droughts declared by the state. So Brown just declared one for this year, although it really started in 2012. This is the third dry year in a row. But remember, we had 2007, 2009 was dry. 2001 and 2 were dry, and then the big drought, 1987 to 1992, that really affected a lot of the state and got people's attention as far as water supply, was about when we were getting started. But the interesting thing about this to me is that in 87 to 92, Discovery Bay is just starting, you can see the production curve just starting to rise, and those water levels look pretty stable in that time period. And then even from 07, 09 to the present, they're lower because of this, you know, we've increased the production, but they're really quite stable during the same time period that we're having all these dry years. And so one reason for that, I think, is if I go way back to the slide that you know, this setting where we're up here in this corner, what's different about here than the rest of the San Joaquin Valley? Well, we're right next to this river system, and the delta essentially is always at the same elevation. It's at sea level, and as long as it's fresh, a lot of, certainly all the shallow zones, we're pumping from a deeper zone, but certainly all the shallow zones maintain their levels, and we're being the only pumper where we are in this fluvial system, I think it's one reason that we're relatively stable, where many other areas of the valley, including Sacramento Valley, where our office is, we see these steep declines and droughts. They recover in wet periods, but ours are, the water levels here are relatively stable, and that's what this data is showing us. So even through the drought, and in fact, you can see those last points way to the right are even higher in this year, February of 2014, than they were the last few years.
Is that due to a slower discharge and pumping water down the Dakota Canal, California water?
I think you have a recharge source that is probably some distance from here. I think it's different than where Brentwood and Oakley are situated. Yours is coming from this river system. The pathway for it, you know, we have a lot of clay over our zone, so it's not direct percolation, but it's some distance away, and I think it's fed by the river as opposed to Marsh Creek that feeds Brentwood's wells, that kind of. So the other, so that's water level. So water quality, this is just gonna be one slide on this. It's a fairly short story, but this shows all the wells and roughly the same time period, but essentially in terms of this parameter, total dissolved solids, it's been constant in all the wells except for 5A, and 5A we've discussed with you before, it has an issue with the abandonment of the well that's right next to it, and there's a conduit, we think, we understand the mechanism for, at times, water from that shallow zone will go through the structure and get there. So it's a structural issue, not an aquifer problem. And I have a couple slides at the very end to emphasize that, or to show that and give us even more confidence that we're staying separate from that salty zone.
It's definitely an anomaly compared to all the rest of our world.
Yeah. So that's the water quality story. I'll talk a little bit about basin yield, but first I'll just contrast that with well yield. So when we talk about what a well produces versus a basin, I'm going to make this distinction. So a well yield is basically the flow rate in gallons per minute that we pump in each of these individual wells, and they might range from around here, you know, 1,800 to 2,000 gallons a minute. So it's a function of these things that I've listed here, and if there's nothing, there's no limiting factor. The bottom line says that basically yield is dictated by the pump you put in the well. So this has nothing to do with the basin. It's just like if I could put a 100-gallon a minute pump or 2,000-gallon a minute pump in any well in Discovery Bay, and that's the capacity of the well. But a basin's a little bit different. So a basin yield, we usually express the extraction in terms of acre feet per year. So those numbers I was showing you, your production in millions of gallons per year, translate today at 12 to 1,300 million gallons a year is about 4,000 acre feet a year, just for perspective. Now, the whole San Joaquin Valley is probably hundreds of thousands of acre feet per year, so you're a small fraction of that total. So the size, the basin produces as a function of its size, the properties, and then recharge sources, but that arrow at the bottom basically says the bottom line on the yield is that you have to have a long-term balance between what you pump and at what recharges. So if there's no recharge and you continue to pump, you're just taking water out of storage, and just like a reservoir or Lake Shasta, it's just gonna continue to decline if there's no replenishment. So over a long period, you can go through droughts, wet periods. As long as it continues to recover, we're good. in this case, it seems like the drought didn't, you know, we seem to be somewhat immune to a drought because in the dry periods we haven't seen water levels decline. And so what we're going to be looking at forward is just to, that those water levels stay within that range. And they seem to be even up to February of this year. So this is making that point of long-term balance between extraction and recharge. So we had a period in 20 years ago where water where extraction was averaged about 600 million gallons per year, and water levels were stable at that upper dashed line. You saw the steep rise coming up in the 2000s as you grew, and now we have fairly stable production, and water levels seem to be stabilizing at that lower level. And as long as that, you know, as long as the water levels are steady, then it tells us we have this long-term balance between what we're pumping and what's being replenished. Same thing with water quality. There seems to be there's definitely even a stronger indicator that things are in balance. Water quality is not a limiting factor for us. And then there is a third, so then this is our checklist. So we always will ask ourselves this every year, and every, you know, significant change in the way you operate your system or grow and expand and use water, we continually look at whether water levels are stable, water quality is stable. And then there is a third factor, and I know, I'm sure you've all heard about subsidence. There's issues in the Delta, but then particularly in the San Joaquin Valley with that being a factor, an issue with groundwater pumping. So the question is, do we have that here? And we did look at this in 2011. You participated in a local or regional groundwater management plan, and there was a report that came out that looked at subsidence, and there were three subsidence stations around here, and I put an arrow by one that's just north of us. And from 2005 2009, there's a lot of noise in this data, but it did look like there was about 8 millimeters of subsidence. So, I mean, in some parts of the San Joaquin Valley, we're talking about feet of subsidence. So this is a minor concern, but something that is on always when you're pumping, when you rely on groundwater, it's something you always have to have on your checklist to look at. And so we do have a GPS station that is monitored, and data is collected, and we'll continue to review that. But subsidence to date, at least through this time period, wasn't an apparent problem.
Who manages that station?
It's a national organization. I forget right now. But I don't know the. I don't remember.
But it's an on. Even though we.
It's something that we download.
We're ongoing in that research.
We'll retrieve the data and look at it, but it's out in the public domain. So it's a government type of entity that does that. By the way, I thought drive it up. John and I were talking, but I did want to mention one other thing about the stability between pumping and recharge. And so I've plotted here your pumping, and you do have neighbors, and I don't have too much concern about Brentwood. They're in that another sort of regime. I called it the alluvial regime, and it's influenced more by what comes off the coast range than you. But ECCID does have wells in the same setting or in the same aquifer system that you are in, and they're along their canal, and they're there to pump in the, they have a water exchange with a contract with Contra Costa Water District that in certain periods they will forego surface water deliveries and pump. And so one of the questions that I, on my list is to find out, you know, when have they done that? When are they going to? And we, you know, we ought to, this would be something that we'd look to update this. I think those wells are fairly new in the last 3 or 4 years, but this might be a year they might use them. And so we want to identify that as a possible influence on water levels in Discovery Bay. So that would be one. Usually I think of you guys as being out here by yourself, and you really are. There's nobody until you get to Stockton that's pumping, but ECCID is a neighbor, and they potentially could pump up to 3,000 acre feet a year is their contract with CCWD.
Actually, that was one of the questions I had for you, Tom. that there are other ag wells that a lot of our neighbors put in with regards to irrigation of the farmlands and to provide, you know, grazing lands for their cattle and that type of thing. So when you were preparing this, did you take into consideration those other wells that are going into our aquifer, not just ECCID, and is there any way to see if there's any significant effect that those have on our...
Yeah, the and that, if we were to do more detailed, say, I don't know, counting of all that, we would try to factor that in, but a lot of those are getting surface water too, and then there may be times that they don't, and then they go to pumping, and we'd want to try to account for that. So that's an important factor, and especially in a year like this, kind of unprecedented, and there may be more pumping that we have not seen before. So I think it's definitely something to start thinking about, and to go back to this, you know, these water levels, and if we start to see another drop, we can ask ourselves, is that us? If we're stable, then why are they dropping? There could be other pumpers, and we'd have, you know, we'd want to try to see what that influence is.
So from your perspective, and I don't, it's your business. So from your perspective, those wells that we're talking about outside of Discovery Bay, as you mentioned, for intents and purposes, are on our own island out here. Mm-hmm. Those type of wells are really only used, they're not used consistently like ours are. Ours are pumping all the time. Those other wells that we talk about in the ag areas are used only under certain, they're not a constant draw well.
No, they'd be seasonal.
Okay.
And right. Then even in the season, they'd be
okay.
Intermittent.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's about how many acre feet though you pump?
Yeah, I mean, the way we'd estimate it, so those pumpers don't have to report it. It's not available anywhere.
Right.
But if we looked at land use and we looked at mm-hmm. surface water that that ECCID delivered or Byron Bethany delivered to their customers, and if it was cut back, we'd have to assume that if you see the same farmland under, being
right.
farmed,
right.
they're getting water from somewhere, it's below ground.
Okay.
And so that's one way that you try to, you know, you can close the loop on that equation.
Okay, thank you.
So subsidence. So ongoing, just a couple more slides, ongoing monitoring and evaluation. So you had a master plan update that, or master plan recently that recommended some water level monitoring and with transducers, and John has been reporting every 2 years on the state of the wells, and a lot of that data from both of those I've used in this presentation tonight. I'll show you, so a water level transducer, I'm going to show you a slide here. So a transducer, instead of that manual sounder that we put into a well, this is a little device about an inch in diameter that we put in. It's got a data logger, so it records the pressure change or the fluctuating head of the water level in the well, so the fluctuating water level. And that's what's shown here on this monitoring well 4A, or at the well 4A site. We have a shallow monitoring well in that brackish zone, and one in the deep zone that's our production zone. So that W shape of the deep zone is the seasonal fluctuation in water levels. So in the spring, it's the highest, and I think from memory, that's about a 40-foot fluctuation from spring to fall or spring to late summer. And the thickness of that is on this scale, is the pump coming on and off. So it ends up being a blurring the whole line, and it looks like a really thick line, but I'll show you in a minute an expanded view of that. So one concern we have and one use of these transducers in this well, they record automatically, so like every 15 minutes, and we get a reading, so we're not sending somebody out to do this. So you really get a lot of information, and you can evaluate address certain questions. So this one is, does that shallow zone, which seems to have a little bit of a, on this scale, seems to fluctuate slightly, and maybe even a seasonal, something coinciding with the deep. So we blow that up, and we take a look at that, and now the shallow is still in red, and the deep is the blue. And so basically at the bottom, the deep means that the well is on, and when it spikes up, it means it turned off, and so the water level rose. And you can see that the shallow is actually acting independent of that. It's actually acting with the tide. And so on this, over a period of 2 days, you can see the tidal action in this shallow unconfined zone. If you look closely, there's actually a correspondence in the pump coming on and off and a little blip in the shallow zone, and it's actually reverse of a hydraulic connection. It's related to the compression or the stress and strain on the earth materials when you turn a pump on and start to pump groundwater. And so this confirms that there's no hydraulic connection between the shallow and deep, which is really an important conclusion going forward, and in the way we design the wells, and the way you can be assured that in the absence of any other potential contaminant sources, that we're not going to bring that brackish water and contaminate our aquifer at the pumping rates we are now or even in the foreseeable future.
So just so you guys understand, that's monitoring wells at well 4A. We have the main production well that's completed. How deep is the
It's correspondence to the blue curve.
Blue curve. So we have two wells, right? Two wells next to the main well. And we're looking at the water levels in the shallow well and a deeper monitoring well right next to the production well. So the big production well is coming on and delivering water to your system. And then the transducers sit in these shallow wells right next to it, and it's measuring the changes in the water levels. And it's important that we don't see the shallow water level move with the deep water level, because then the salts might be coming down too, and we don't see that connection.
So, and all I can read on our chart, because these aren't blown up big enough for us to be able to see anything, is deep and shallow.
Yeah.
So, for clarification, or to make sure I'm reading this chart correctly, you've superimposed the shallow over the deep on this chart.
Yeah,
they're not related to depth at this point.
They are on that one.
Yes, but not
and
on.
And I moved them because.
No, that makes sense though. It's easier for us to.
I wanted to line them up because
I just want to make sure I wasn't missing something.
Until we had this data, I would just tell you that it's my opinion.
Right.
Well, now I'll tell you that it's factual.
That's good news.
And you know, we had strong evidence before, but this is the most direct thing that you can do. And by the way, this is the same kind of exercise. So you have wells next to the, so if people are doing water exchanges in the Sacramento Valley, so wells next to the Sacramento River, they're pumping and irrigating farmland and sending surface water south. The state looks at that and says, okay, you got to prove to me you're not just pumping the river water back in. And this is one way to do that. You know, so you could set it up and have a shallow monitoring well, and if I could pump and show you I'm not affecting the shallow, then I get, you know, then my water transfer, you know, can be.
Does the state make them actually do that though?
They have criteria where you have to have so much clay and so much distance, but you can, and even with that, they have a factor like 12% off the top. They're just going to say we're going to assume it unless you can show us something different, and so this would be one way to do that. They don't require this, but they require other things.
Do we have, is 4A the only well that we have the transducers in?
No, 1B, one well, 1B.
Okay.
There's two, and then
six.
Six, there's two out here in the monitoring well.
And the data's pretty similar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the depth of the wells?
The shallow is like 120, 130 feet, because that, it's completed, it's unconfined, which means that it's actually connected to the delta, and that's why you see that tidal influence. And but the brackish zone is about 110 to 120, so it's completed in that. And then this other deep one is like like 300 feet, and it's completed similarly to the production well.
So the yellow bar on the one, how thick is that?
anywhere from 50 to 80 feet. Are there screen intakes?
No, what I mean is from the bottom of the aquifer to or the top of the aquifer.
Yeah, well, there's actually two lobes, and so the net of them might be 80 feet and 20 feet between them, so we might have 100 feet. And that, so this is my last slide, so I called it I just named some milestones, at least from my view, as far as things that you're doing or have done that are important to, you know, being able to give this story tonight. So starting in 1999, that one slide that I showed where we sort of sorted out through, I don't know, there was 400 or 500 well logs that went into cross sections and developing that map that was very simplified to show these different areas. That was in 1999, and it was you were a participant in that. There is a groundwater management plan that applies to this area. You're a participant in that. In other words, for certain grant funding that requires a groundwater management plan, you're under that. Diablo Water District was the lead. There was an update in 2011. That was the subsidence data that was there. You have a 2010 water master plan that deals with some of these monitoring questions. And then the California statewide groundwater elevation monitoring program, CASGEM, also a requirement for all basins, was submitted on according to law. It had to be done in a certain time frame, done in 2011. The reporting entity is Diablo Water District, and so you, Brentwood, ECCID, submit water levels in your monitoring wells, and then it ends up in the state database. Just a requirement. It's something that all, if you don't do it, the state comes in and does it for you, and so you maintain control of that. So those are the important, I think, things that have been done and that you're a participant in.
I have one other question. I want to go back to subsidence for just a moment. Mm-hmm. Isn't our soil out here ripe for subsidence, though, with all the peat moss that we have? Isn't that typically where you would have a concern of subsidence with a lot of peat moss in the composition of the soil?
Well, so, you know, when we drove, along the river road, I guess from Rio Vista to the Antioch Bridge, you know, where we're well above the ground, that's all that type of soil that's dried out and now compressed. And so you're not doing that where you're drying things out. Okay. You're saturated. So the shallow, if we're on top of that type same material, if you haven't dewatered it because you,
okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
And then what's different about where we are, but you're right, it's also the clays and the fine-grained materials that are overlie our aquifer that elsewhere in the valley lead to subsidence. They compact. And so what happens is if water levels continue to decline, and yours haven't, they've taken a step down, but they've been stable, and there probably has been some reaction to that, but possibly immeasurable. I mean, it's, you know, 8 millimeters in that time period. It's hard to say what that would be, whether it's ear pumping or other factors. But in the valley where water levels may have declined 200 feet, and you've now mined water in those clays have given up water. They don't take it back. It's compacted, and that's why, you know, historically we see 30 feet of subsidence in Mendota, some of these other communities, and we've got 8 millimeters here. I mean, it's a different setting.
So our clay soil is still working as a filter and remains hydrated?
It remains hydrated. You haven't drawn things down to where it's a problem.
Because I think in the last meeting you guys were talking, you did a little more breakdown on on the chart where it shows the different layers.
Yeah.
You talked about that area between the two aquifers and how that was a clayish, almost natural filtration system for us. And I think, John, it was you that said we're just really fortunate that that's above our aquifer.
Well, that blue zone right there is what protects your aquifer that we're pumping from. All those vertical lines are your wells, and they have screens in that bottom yellow. The upper yellow is the brackish zone, but it's separated. The reason that transducer showed no response is that it's separated by that blue clay zone.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mary, you got questions?
No. Thank you.
Bill?
Yeah. I want to kind of go into your professional opinion into the future a little bit. If I understood you properly, our aquifer is being supplied by the river, San Joaquin River, further north from here. About how far do you think, is there a feel for how far that
well,
is?
Well, I won't even go that far,
except
to say that it's distinct from where we know that areas from Oakley through Brentwood are directly recharged off the Coast Range there. That you're actually physically separated. I mean, that their wells and your wells are in zones that don't seem to meet. If we look at wells in between, we can't draw straight lines between them. So there's some distinct there's a change there, and they're not hydraulically, they don't seem to be hydraulically connected, or if they are, it's a pretty torturous path. And so we think that the deposition of this was more the north-south trend of the San Joaquin River and the ancient San Joaquin River, and so therefore probably the source of this may be the Sierras. And you'd think that at some point, if we have 100 more dry years in a row, we're just going to everybody's going to run out, and we'll see that. But as long as we see water out in the delta, I suspect, certainly in the shallow zone, we're always going to see water there, and to some extent, we'll see it in the deep zone.
Where I was going with that is the twin tunnel concept, mm-hmm. where they want to take the fresh surface water, 40 diameter feet pipe, and run it out of here. My concern would be, if that amount of fresh water, which possibly is percolating down and filling our aquifer, could lead to water quality issues, because now we've got saltwater intrusion coming lower, and also could cause some subsidence. Is that, have you even looked into that, or is that something that you guys have?
Yeah, I mean, I just, like you as a citizen, tried to look at that and understand what was going on. I don't think that hydraulically it is something that I've thought, oh, this is a problem for Discovery Bay, Brentwood, these areas, the way you just speculated. I'd have to give that more thought.
Right, but I'm just going based, a novice on this knowledge here, saying, well, it's being,
it's a plumbing fix to to isolate the fresh water to make sure that it doesn't get contaminated with salt water, less vulnerable to some of the issues with levees and things like that.
Right, but the salinity, would it be your professional opinion, the salinity just even out from
if it started flowing through here, through town here, went way up, again, we're protected as we are from the 110-foot zone right there because of all this clay. So it wouldn't be a problem for your supply wells. It'd probably be a problem for a lot of domestic wells between here and the delta that are shallow, 80, 150 feet that get inundated with that.
All right. So if I understand what you're saying, and your thought process is, water coming off the Sierra somewhere up in there.
Yeah.
It's actually going down into the aquifer and coming to us.
Yeah,
unrelated to water coming down the Sacramento River.
That's right. And so you'd say, hey, well, why can't you figure that out? Well, the reason we can't figure that out, when we first started here, we look at Discovery Bay, and the way you would do that is you try to map the contours and see which direction it's flowing. So water is kind of like the topography. It'll go downhill. But you're an island. There's nothing between you and Stockton. There's nothing I can map out there. And there's no well control beyond you. And if I try to contour water levels within Discovery Bay, it's all influenced by your pumping.
Yeah,
so there's no way to really tell. On the other hand, in the Brentwood, Oakley area, we have a network of wells that we can map that, and we can see a slope of that from the mountains out to the delta. So it's just flowing out in that direction. I don't know where, I speculate it's coming from the south, coming with the river, but I have no way to map that because we don't have any well control.
Right. Thank you. Chris, any questions?
No, appreciate that.
Is there anything else? Tom, thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. Well, Virgil, you got a question?
Yeah, not so much a question, but just to add on, I think, to what Kevin talked about and what Tom mentioned, that this time of the year with the ag lands, if they don't have enough water, they're going to be going to the wells. As you may know, the irrigation districts around here really supply them with the water, and it's cheaper for them to get the surface water than it is from the well, because electricity to pump that up and run that, depending on when they need that. So this next year or two may tell us, especially we grab those sensors on our monitoring wells, we grab them quarterly, and so maybe by the end of the year we can see what impact, are they really different than what we had in 2013, which may indicate to us. Now the wells that these folks put in do not have sensors in them, unless they're gonna pay money to buy them and put them in like we do, but most of them do not. So they just flip the switch on, run, they don't care. You know, one of these days they may get regulated, but it may not. So I just wanted to add that info.
All the monitoring data that we have, then it's that was all quarterly?
The transducers every, like, you know, for the last 2 years, every 15 minutes.
15 minutes. So,
you know,
well, we read them quarterly.
But all those dots on the map
are
on the plots. Those date back before we even had transducers. And those are, we just went through our files and when it comes out to visit, we usually try to measure water level and then we record
charge.
It.
So, yeah. All right.
Thank you. All right, let's move to director's comments. Kevin, anything?
Yeah, I went to the Aviation Advisory Committee meeting last week, and they're evaluating the assets out of the Byron Airport. They had a bunch of stuff about Buchanan also, but basically they're evaluating their assets out there, and they keep talking about when the new freeway gets through, that's going to go right next to their land. They keep hoping that they're going to have a greater impact in the whole picture of the role that Byron would play in the Bay Area airports with regards to even maybe having some cargo situations come out there and it finally creates some sort of tax base for itself. So other than that, not much.
Is the runway out there, I don't know, left or not, but you can take can't take C5 Galaxy.
No.
They have room to expand it.
C-130 or something like that. FedEx
actually, it's a long, I think it's 30. 3,800 feet. It's a pretty good sized runway.
They have room out there to expand?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so they take runway long.
Yeah, well, they have, I should say, wait a minute, let me hold on. The problem is they're surrounded by mountains. So their approach is all, they're restricted in their approach and departure and their direction because they can't go east, they can't go north, south, whatever, because they got mountains in the bowl. So that's always been a challenge for them, and it always will be. But they still think that they, it's really talk at this point, but there's a grand scheme that they're, that the whole, all the airports in the Bay Area work underneath this umbrella of how are we going to work together as a team? And so they keep trying to bring Byron into that so they can get funding for it. Pretty much.
Did they talk about any of that land sales you want around there? There's like 1,000 acres, 500 acres have been sold or pending next door to the airport for development?
Which I know. They, okay. They
Comment, Chris?
I don't know.
Marianne?
I do. I went to the P6 meeting. And I typed up some notes. Just briefly, one of their main concerns is the continued funding for the officer to the schools. They were very big on making recommendations to the, for investment suggestions on that $1 million with the Sheriff's Department. And then there was a citizen in the audience that talked about a lot of problems they're having with youth out of control in the parks at the lakes and the lakeshore.
What's what?
At the lakes and at the lakeshore subdivisions. They're having a lot of problems with the kids in the parks.
Okay, okay.
Drugs, breaking bottles, things of that nature. That's pretty much it.
Well, if the sheriff does have jurisdiction there, I'm surprised they're not going in there. Did the sheriff say they're going to change
yes,
control?
The sheriff, in fact, told the gentleman that was there he would speak with him after the meeting and make a point of going over there and
thank you.
Getting a little more involved.
I don't know.
Hold on a second. Bill?
No.
Christian.
So I don't know everybody that was went to the town hall meeting they had for the Delta last week, but there was some good discussion in there. The Governor Brown and the state are still adamant about trying to figure out how they're going to divert that water north of Sacramento or Sacramento area. I'm hoping that in the near future that the board gets more active and vocal, and there's some deadlines coming up. April 14th is one of the major comment deadlines, and I'm going to be put together a letter for myself and share it with you guys on how the board could be more vocal. I think the Delta, we've got some aquifer, we have a little safety margin maybe, but I think that I think it's important that we speak up as a board.
That was exactly where I was going with my question. I wasn't hoping for a bad answer, but if there was something there, that was something we could.
Yeah, there were probably close to 300 people there.
Yeah, 300. It was the biggest crowd I've ever seen at the
very well
school. And
you can get half of those people to write
appropriate.
They handed out hints for people to go online and write our email.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to the consent calendar. Can I get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
I'll second.
Any discussion? Call for the vote, all those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. New business, item one, mission, vision, goals, and value statement. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This item has been before you a couple of times now. It was initially brought back, it was initially brought to the board, to the then board on September 19th, 2007. The, we discussed it at the January 1st workshop, and the board made some recommended changes, and those are identified on the attachment to the report. Staff has gone ahead and made those changes in a strikeout underline format. So if this is okay with you, we would go ahead and then bring it back and put it on consent with a resolution to adopt it. So if you want to go back and go through this and make any comments or suggestions as to what was made back on February 1st, I think we were able to grab most of those from the meeting minutes and from the tape of the audio of the meeting to pull those in so we have that information.
Questions?
Item four under vision. I'm confused by that. Provide enhanced and sustainable life. How do we, how as a board do we provide anybody an enhanced life or a sustainable life? How's the board to be able to do that?
I think we should promote practices that support that.
That's a different statement, see. Yeah. But to say we're going to provide it is making a commitment that I personally can't fulfill. I can't walk up to somebody and say I'm going to provide you with an enhanced life.
That's tough to do.
That doesn't make sense to me. I don't.
Yes, I agree with you.
What was that?
Just your presence.
Oh yeah, thanks, Rob.
That's the joy.
You just enhance my life.
Thank you. I'd have to agree with you there.
I mean, I think there's a way to say it, but that just seemed like all of a sudden, boom. I don't like provide the highest quality either, because that's even a greater commitment.
That you can't do either.
But there needs to prefacing it with
promote practices that help enhance and sustain
something along those lines. Now that makes sense to me, because now we're striving to do things within the community that will help people enhance.
So let's decide on the wording we like here.
I like what Chris said. It was, I don't
say it again, Chris.
Promote practices that enhance sustainable life.
Very good.
Short.
Yep.
For now and future generations, that part stays the same. Does that make sense? I'm not a linguist.
Carol, you got that?
Promote practices which enhance sustainable life.
Sustainable life.
Now and for future
generations.
I think the and should be in there. I
need to
say it again.
Promote practices which enhance. Sustain.
Which provide. Which. That can.
Promote practices that provide enhanced and sustainable life now and for the future.
Okay, there you go. For future generations.
Did you get that, Carol?
Promote practices which provide, enhance.
Provide and enhance. Provide enhanced and sustainable life. Just with. That part you can take
enhance sustainable life.
All the way to the end.
Now into the Allen for future.
Thank you. That makes more sense to me.
We actually struggled with that when we went back and listened to the minutes. We had to go back about three or four times to make sure, is that what they said? I'm glad you brought that up.
All right. Everybody agree on that?
Yes.
Sure.
Any comments for goals or values?
I guess we said we weren't going to be stewards.
Do we want to set a time frame into the future when, say, another board would, just so we set something for another board to look at, to review these, to modify or adjust, just to keep up with the time?
These will come back to you every year. Every board, this will come back to you annually with your goal planning workshop like we did on February the 1st. It will be there. And assuming, you know, for future boards, it will be a consistent piece that revisit these. If you remember from the workshops up in Napa, that was one of the comments, was you need to revisit these regularly to make sure that they're still applicable.
Sure. So. All right. Okay. Any other questions or comments?
So, Carol, make sure you put that on the forecast. It's an annual event.
No, I think I'm okay.
Okay, so we need a motion to approve this.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Any comments? Further discussion? Public comment? No public here. Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Item two.
Item two was pulled from our last agenda regarding the Community Foundation. If you recall, back on January the 8th, the board had discussion, but took no formal action regarding the formation of a community foundation. Although they expressed, I believe you expressed support for a community foundation of some type. Director Wiesen had submitted to the board for consideration a draft of a memorandum of understanding that's used in Brentwood, and it's attached to this report this evening. And what ended up happening is I ended up reading this along with legal counsel, and also under the impression that the board was envisioning a community center foundation to be a true foundation in the sense that they would raise money for large capital assets, for example, maybe building a swimming pool or renovating facilities and grounds, whereas I believe what Director Wiesen was proposing was more of a friends group that would provide some day-to-day volunteer support, some fundraising for smaller level activities and assets, maybe, you know, provided by the coffee for the for people that use the center on a regular basis, that sort of thing. And so I just wanted to get clarification, and whichever way the board decides to go is fine. But there was a disconnect there, so I wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page. And I'm sure that Director Wiesen has some comments.
Oh, I'm just going to say, I think I was on a different road. What I was looking at was more of a service-related organization that provided volunteers over at the center, put on functions, et cetera, and I think Chris was thinking more of a major fundraising foundation. Now, you certainly can mesh the two, but they have a little bit different goals in that the one is more of a group of volunteers that provide service, which amounts to a lot of money, too. I mean, people volunteering their time is equal to, like, $20 an hour.
Yeah, it was a service foundation.
And the other is more of a major fundraiser.
I don't know why you would need a foundation to get volunteers to help. There's no
operating the system.
I think that what she's referring to would be not necessarily a foundation to get volunteers to help, more of a friends of the community center group. They would help with the volunteer program and that sort of thing.
Well, if you read the MOU that's attached, the MOU provides very clear picture of what the senior citizens group in Brentwood has as a agreement with the city of Brentwood, as to what they do, what the town, what the city does, so on and so forth.
I was under the impression, I think from staff's side, that it was a fundraising mechanism. For whatever reason, I didn't hear the I probably heard volunteers, but I didn't know it was set up to augment staff. I'm not saying it's a bad thing at all. My first question would be, well, how do you set up the time, and how much staff involvement to say, well, volunteer A, you going over here, and volunteer B,
it doesn't work that way.
Okay.
There is fundraising. There are events that are put on. For example, we're going to be having the health and wellness fair here. That should bring in $3,000 to $4,000. It brought in that much in Brentwood. Totally done by volunteers. No staff involvement at all. Other, you know, maybe helping a little bit with designing some forms or whatever, but minimal involvement. Providing, like now, they could certainly use help half days over here for people to come in and volunteer. The volunteer at the Brentwood Senior Center building itself is all volunteers. There are no full-time staff there at all. So those individuals that run that, it's a volunteer that runs the program and a volunteer that puts in the volunteers and trains the volunteers. So the amount of, in fact, it's 20% of one staff member is assigned to be a liaison to the senior club. But again, they're two different visions. They both have the same goal, but the foundation is more going out after big bucks. That's a whole different ballgame from getting the community involved in day-to-day helping at the center.
I think it's a great idea.
It doesn't seem to me, though, to make sense to create a nonprofit, because that's what you're talking about doing, right? Create a nonprofit that's limiting like that. I mean, if in fact, at some point in time, we were able to get donors to donate large money, let's say, you know, this pool thing takes off, and we know that that pool's not ideal for it, and we want to build a different pool. And there's already, people already asked me about that. I said, hey, well, hold on, let's get it in the water first before we talk about building another pool, you know? Happened to be at the dentist office the other day. And, I mean, why couldn't you incorporate that, even if one function isn't even going to be used at this particular time, create your articles of incorporation to include that function also, so if at some time, then you have to go recreate another nonprofit to do that.
I agree. There's no reason why it can't be meshed
right
together.
So and as I look at this MOU, the only reason it's a little bit doesn't really fit what we're doing is because everything listed here is a senior function.
Right.
They did it just for their own benefit, and we're talking about being more encompassing and encompassing all different programs at the center, and therefore, I could see us making sure that we include the things we need, be visionaries. They include the things we need, even though we probably won't use that function right away. It's there if somebody comes and says, hey, I'll throw $100,000 at a new pool because I got grandkids that want to swim in it and I got all kinds of money.
Exactly, and they can earmark it. They can earmark it and say, we're making that donation, just like the library
mechanism for them to be able to do that.
I do like the idea of having volunteers in there.
I do too.
I think the other thing that it creates, when you have people in a building, it creates excitement. I mean, when you walk into an empty building, is there something wrong with
that? No, I'm telling you, you're right on the nose.
Oh, I thought there was something. When you walk into an empty building, you it's an empty building. When you've got something going on in the building and you've got volunteers and it's not costing you anything, it's just a fabulous idea.
Yeah. You want to see excitement, Mark, you ought to come over in that building at 5:30 on a Tuesday night, and that place is just jumping.
6:30 on a Tuesday night.
5:30.
Oh, when we get there.
Hey, come on, dude. What are you talking about?
I
don't think I want to see that.
Are all those people
playing bridge?
Well, the
new session starts
Saturday
in 2 weeks, and they expect you to be there.
I think that you can get, you'll get a lot more use out of the athlete. I mean,
I honestly agree. I think that that's an awesome function of the foundation. I just want to make sure the foundation encompasses.
And we should incorporate it all as one, and that's where we should put it. Yeah.
And that's where it'll start.
Absolutely.
It's going to start with that process, but if, like I said, let's build a mechanism in so it's available to use.
I agree. Any other, Chris, any comment?
No, I agree with that. The concept, I had me confused a little bit, but it's clear, and you need money.
More volunteers.
All right, so you don't need two of them.
Rod, what do we need at this point to move this forward?
Well, it's... You would need a motion and a second.
I don't need a motion. I mean, you know, I mean,
we're giving you guys
right now. I think we've got direction, but we don't have anything to necessarily approve, and so,
so at this point,
we're giving direction to staff as to what we want, what we want them to bring back to us that encompasses the thoughts and ideas that we just presented.
The outline of this, you could call it a foundation, or what? How do you term it?
You could call it Friends of the Discovery Bay Community Center.
All right, and it has a fundraising mechanism on the side.
Absolutely.
It has all these other things.
Volunteers and events.
And Chris, right now, I gave him the bylaws from that he's working on.
You guys will be able to tweak that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. We've got the bones.
All right. We wouldn't be the board. We're going to come back.
All right, so at this point, this is just a fact-finding mission.
Yes.
Chris and Mary Ann are now
heading
in the direction.
So what do you think, Mary Ann? We'll update these guys in a month and see where we're at?
Yep.
Okay, right. So you're going to bring us back?
Yep.
Okay. In that case, we'll move from new business. Onto informational items only, which we just need to know that there is a park transfer agreement between the town of Discovery Bay and Contra Costa County. And that's not for discussion.
No, but I want to hear about it.
The park transfer, thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. As the board is aware, we've been working with the county for quite some time, back to 2012, actually. Early 2012, discussing the park transfer of both Slifer and Regatta Parks to the town of Discovery Bay. We already maintain those parks under contract to the county. It makes sense that we own those parks. The fact that they're in a lighting and landscaping zone and that they have to be divided or separated out of that zone, if you will, because there are other assets that will stay in that lighting and landscaping zone that are not just the boundaries of those parks themselves. So that's really what is, that's what's been taking so much time. We were presented a, back in October, or back in September, Ferrandine and myself were, I think Dina was in that meeting, were, the county came and met with us, Public Works, Special Districts Division, and presented us with a draft of what an agreement might look like. They didn't leave it with us because it hadn't gone through county council yet. They just kind of wanted us to have an idea of what, we had any major heartburn over it, and we thought it actually looked pretty good, and we went ahead and said, go ahead and go with that, and submit it to county council. It's been in county council's office since that time. We expected it back late October, and I can tell you the fact that this agenda item came up, I received a call on Friday, or on Thursday, and this item, this agreement is now moving through the county council's office, and meetings have taken place with Public Works since this item has been put on the agenda. So I'm hoping we can get this on. Director Steele brought this up, Vice President Steele brought this up at the workshop in February, asked about it, so I thought that it would be an appropriate time just to bring it to your attention as to what we've been going through and some of the frustrations we've had with this. I'm hopeful that we'll get it. We were hoping to have it in place by July 1st of this fiscal year. So I'm guessing we're hopeful to have it in July 1st of next fiscal year.
Okay. Yeah, my question is, what's the supervisor's view of this? Is she aware?
Very supportive.
Okay. Because what I'm reading here says, at this point, there's no planned time frame. Couldn't we ask her office to make a phone call down in the county council?
That has taken place.
Okay.
That took place last week, and it took place again last week, and that is what resulted in the meeting with County Council Public Works, as I understand, that took place last week.
All right, so we'll get an update maybe a month?
I'm hoping so.
Oh.
The time frame is probably four months. Yeah.
It, you know, once it gets to county council, it's got to go through our council. It's got to go through staff review, and it's going to get, you know, Rod's office and get involved in it. And we'll go from there. Like I said, the initial draft, we didn't have any real heartburn over it. There was nothing in there that was not part of our discussions that we had with the county on it. It was pretty straightforward. It was a pretty simple agreement. So I'm surprised it's taken this long.
Everything's itemized and identified, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Well, my only comment is that because it gets dragged down at county council, it's not a high priority for them if we're the squeaky wheel. Okay.
Thanks for your help on that.
All right, let's move on to item H, Veolia. How are you, Furman?
I'm fine. A lot better than last month.
Yes, I was gonna say.
Yeah, you didn't work too good last month.
Good evening, board.
Good evening.
The only water be presenting the January monthly operating report. We had some training in Oakley on clay bow. We also had some annual training, the hazardous fire extinguisher annual training. We had 13 safety tailgates, monthly training of escape routes and procedures. This slide right here is a little bit unusual. Typically, I have like three reports that I give to regulatory agencies. In the month of January, I had like 12. So there was a lot of report writing that we had to do in January. And there's a lot of material, a lot of information that was given in these reports.
That's an annual thing every January?
Every year. For example, just to give you an idea, the annual prior pollutant report, which is probably the worst one, it had 18 pages of parameters that were tested. So for the DMR, just our one report, we typically have like 4 pages. It was like 20-something pages, I think, added to for that one, for the report. So this is a little unusual. You don't see it too often, but it was an ugly month for report writing. Okay, we have the typical information here. Of course, I started the new water production table with only January, and you'll be able to see the trending as we go forward in the year. Here's the lab data. There wasn't anything unusual, and it looked pretty much, you know, the same. Any questions with the lab data?
There's nothing that sticks out? Anything?
Okay. No, it's pretty good. Everything looks pretty good. Again, back teeth came out good. They're negative. Wastewater received was 40 million gallons. The collection system, good news, we began CCTVing the collection system. Right now we're approximately 27.6%. Tyrone left for 2 weeks. He'll be coming back in, I think, a week, and he's going to stay here until the rest, all the work is done. And we'll have that done by May 1st. There wasn't anything really unusual for a collection or some of that. We just continue with the cleaning and the CCTV. Wastewater maintenance. We're starting to switch over on the UV system on a monthly basis instead of doing every 2 months. One thing that was really great to see is that we had a drain installed in UV 3000. Thanks to Virgil, we had a crew down here, and they put a new drain, so we're going to be able to start chlorinating that system so we can get rid of any type of algae that builds up on the sidewalls of the channel. Replace two digester valves, underground digester valves. And also we found a leak in the emergency generator at plant one, which Virgil had repaired also. So those are pretty much the outstanding, really, items for wastewater. For water, Telstar came out, calibrated meters. Our CMMS backlog, it's not too bad, considering the fact that we don't have a person there full time right now. We're taking up that load, and if you'd like to, we can talk about that a little bit. I had 5 people apply for the position. We were offering the position to a person, and he tore his ligaments on his bicep. So we moved on to the second person, and he turned around and decided that he didn't want to take advantage of the opportunity. So we had to go back and open up the advertisement again. I have a person. His name is Larry. Meth, and he started working this week helping us here. He's going to be here for about 2 weeks. I'm going to get Bernie Sadler out here on a temporary basis helping us to fill the position. And I got right now 4 applicants that we're looking at scheduled for interview for the position.
Is that the only job we have open right now?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah. And that's about it. Rest of his terms. Any questions?
Nope. Chris?
No, thank you.
Bill? Marianne?
No.
You're off the hook for me.
Thank
you very much.
As a follow-up to our meeting we had with Veolia in December, thank you. A month from tonight, we've scheduled a follow-up for that meeting. At a regular board meeting, I talked to Furman and Gregory Harris and felt that the work and Virgil as well, and felt that the progress that's being made is positive, it's going in the right direction, and so is to hold another, unless the board really wants to hold a separate board meeting workshop on this, we can probably knock it out in a regular board meeting similar to what we had this afternoon with John Fawcett and Tom Ellison from Ludorf giving a presentation, and be able to do it at that time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sherman. General Manager's report.
None this evening.
Well, thank you. Legal counsel?
I'll follow that lead, nothing for me.
Committee updates, community center status report, there's no written report. Correspondent, you have something?
Yeah, I just had a question, see, from a maintenance standpoint in the renovations, I know we're, there was one, I guess maybe it's the final bill that came through on invoices. Are we pretty well done over there, or there's still stuff?
Were you here for the last meeting, or were you gone?
I was here.
Okay, I believe at the last meeting, Farron gave an update on the expenses for the community center. Everything primarily is completed. There are some small items that as we're going through the building that she's finding and getting corrected. I think she mentioned that she'd like to buy some pool furniture with some of those funds, and while the final bills may not all be in, they were all accounted for in her cost estimate.
That $6,000
bill. They may lag.
The actual invoice may lag. She had that
$6,000 bill. She had the costs included in the number, yes.
All right. Chris?
What's the status of the meeting room being finished with the AV system and the furnishings? When are we going to be able to use that room for a meeting? Or when are you going to roll out the plan, the proposal on that?
Well, I plan hopefully to have that this spring.
Is that March or is that May?
It'll probably be April, May timeframe. It's going to require building a step up, a stage type for the board. It's going to require a complete new audio visual system in there. It's not a simple system to put in because I want to take advantage of the technologies, and I want to be able to have wireless mics so that we don't have to have wires all over the floors and everything. And actually, Kip Edgley, the Veolia Kip, who does this sort of thing, has been helping put together a checklist of items so that we can go to bid on. So he is working on that. I talked to him on it on Thursday, and he hopes to have something back to me by the end of this week or early next week. Yeah. By the time we get it out, go out to bid on some of these items, it'll probably be a couple more months.
Yeah. We had a budget set up for that. Well, you need to bring up the budget.
I'm going to bring you the whole proposal of what we plan on doing.
Are the cameras active yet?
The cameras, what we did is we programmed things, and then the next step is to get them out, to come out and install. Wires were pulled to the sites, what we called Cat 6 wires, and then now we're going to bring in the company to install the cameras. They have the three cameras.
Everything was done, I believe, a week ago Saturday, all the programming, all the backbone of the system. The last thing, as I understand it, just actually mount the cameras.
That's fine. So by the end of next week, we're looking at having that done, you think?
What was that?
End of next week?
I don't know the schedule of the company. I can't speak to that.
I'll find out and let you know.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Correspondence. Any questions on correspondence? Public records requests? None. Future agenda items. Marianne, anything?
Nothing. Thank you.
Bill? Kevin?
Not at this time.
Rick? What did I call you?
Yeah.
No, I called you. Chris, I meant to say.
No, sorry. Thank you.
All right, keeping that in mind, we're adjourned. Thank you.